Pool days call for cookouts and lots of laundry. This Memorial Day at Lowe's, save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Gas Grill. Now just $199. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep dishes, clothes, and food fresh. Having fun in the sun is easy with us in your corner. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last, selection varies by location. See associate or Lowe's.com for details.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
The thing everyone remembered about Arthur was not that he told ghost stories. It was the way he told them. He never lowered his voice or leaned in to make them sound more important than they were. He didn't pause for effect, didn't watch the room to see who was listening, and never tried to convince anyone of anything. He told them the same way he talked about weather, work, or the price of fuel, plainly, without emphasis, as if what he was describing required no explanation beyond the fact that it had happened. That was what made people listen. Arthur was not the kind of man who exaggerated. He had no patience for it in others, and even less in himself. He worked with his hands, kept things where they belonged, and moved through the world with a kind of quiet certainty that made it difficult to imagine him being caught off guard by anything. He didn't talk much about the war. When he did, he kept to the parts people could sit with. Mud, long days, the way men learned to sleep wherever they could. He avoided the details that made a room go quiet. If someone pushed him for more, he would usually shift the conversation without making it obvious. The story about the voice was one of the few exceptions. It usually came out when someone asked him directly whether he believed in ghosts, and even then he never answered the question in the way people expected. He didn't like the word. He said it made things sound simpler than they were. He would tell the story instead. He had been moving with a small group across open ground when the shelling started again, the kind that didn't give a man time to think about anything except where he might be able to take cover. The land had already been torn apart by previous strikes, leaving the field uneven and broken, with shallow dugouts and collapsed trenches offering the only protection available. Arthur reached one of them alone. He dropped into it hard, the packed earth knocking the air from his chest as he pressed himself into the narrow space. For a moment, there was nothing but the smell of soil and the sound of his own breathing. He knew immediately that he was the only one there. The space was too small to hold anyone else, and he had landed in it without seeing another man nearby. Then he heard the voice. It wasn't distant or carried by the noise of the field. It was close, clear, and positioned exactly where another person would have been if there had been room for one. The words came without hesitation, as though they had already been decided before they were spoken. Arthur never tried to make himself sound brave when he told that part. He said he froze at first, not out of fear, but because the voice didn't belong to anything he could account for. It was too immediate to ignore and too close to dismiss. The second time it spoke, there was no pause. Get out now. That was enough. He pulled himself up and out of the dugout without thinking about where he would go next, moving away from the only cover he had just fought to reach. He ran low across the ground until he found what remained of a stone wall and threw himself behind it, pressing into the dirt as the shelling continued. He had barely settled when the dugout took a direct hit. The impact collapsed it completely, the ground folding inward where he had been moments before. Arthur said he remembered the sound more than anything else, the force of it, and the way the air seemed to vanish for a second before everything came rushing back. If he had stayed, he would have died there. That was the part people focused on. It was the part that made the story easy to repeat, the idea that something had intervened at exactly the right moment and saved him. It fit into a shape people recognized, something protective, something that chose him for a reason. Arthur never said that. When people asked him whose voice it had been, he didn't offer an explanation. He didn't call it an angel or a spirit or anything that suggested it had been there for his benefit. He only said that it was a voice and that it had known something he didn't. That was all. He never added to it, never tried to make it mean more than that. The story stood on its own, and he seemed content to leave it there, even when others wanted something clearer to hold on to. It might have stayed that way, a single strange moment in a life otherwise grounded in ordinary things, if it had been the only time something like that had happened to him. But it wasn't. There were other stories told the same way, without emphasis or explanation, each one carrying the same quiet certainty. Some were small, the kind of thing a person might dismiss if it happened once and never again. Others were harder to ignore. The one about the moor came years later. Arthur didn't tell that one as often, and when he did, he kept it shorter, as if length might give it more importance than he thought it deserved. He would say only that he had been walking with a friend, that they had seen someone where no one should have been, and that the man had not moved in a way that made sense. If pressed, he would admit that the figure had been dressed like a soldier, though not one he recognized from any modern army, and that it had appeared more than once in places it could not have reached in the time between. He never tried to connect it to the war. He never suggested it was the same presence. He only told it as something that had happened, and when people asked what he thought it meant, he would shake his head slightly, as if the question itself missed the point. To him, the meaning wasn't the important part. The fact that it had happened was. By the time those stories reached the rest of the family, they had already taken on a different weight, not because Arthur had changed them, but because he hadn't. He told them the same way every time, without embellishment, without hesitation, and without any interest in whether they were believed. That was what stayed with people. Not the details, not even the outcomes, but the way he treated them as ordinary parts of a life that had contained more than most. And the quiet sense that, for him, those moments had never really ended. Arthur never arranged his stories in any particular order. If someone asked him about the war, he would tell the story of the voice and leave it there. If someone asked about the walks on the moor, he would give a shorter answer, something that sounded incomplete unless the listener pushed for more. He didn't connect them, didn't build anything out of them, and never suggested that one had anything to do with another. That didn't mean the stories stayed separate. They only seemed that way at first. The one about the moor was the one people kept coming back to, partly because Arthur never gave it the same attention he gave the war story, and partly because of the way he ended it. He didn't describe it as frightening. He didn't call it anything at all. He simply said that they had seen someone who did not belong there, and that it had been enough for both men to turn back without discussing it. For a long time, that was all anyone had. Later, the rest of it surfaced in pieces, not from Arthur himself, but from the friend who had been with him that day. Colin outlived Arthur by several years, and he was not nearly as reserved when it came to explaining what he thought he had seen. He still didn't dramatize it, but he was more willing to fill in the parts Arthur had left out. It had been late in the year, one of those days when the sky stayed clear, but the air carried the kind of cold that made distance difficult to judge. The moor stretched out in long, uneven lines, rising and falling without offering much shelter, and the standing stones ahead had been visible from nearly a mile away. Arthur and Colin had been talking about nothing important. That was something Colin mentioned more than once. He said they hadn't been paying attention in the way people do when they're expecting something to happen. They were walking, talking, stopping now and then so Colin could look at the light or make a rough sketch. It had been an ordinary afternoon, and that was what made the moment stand out when it shifted. The figure had been below the ridge at first. Colin saw it at the same time Arthur did, though neither of them said anything right away. A man standing alone on open ground wasn't unusual, but something about him didn't sit properly. With the rest of the landscape, the wind moved steadily across the moor, flattening the grass in long, visible lines, but the figure stood against it without adjusting, without even the small shifts a person makes without thinking. They kept walking. Colin said, "That part mattered." Neither of them wanted to be the one who stopped first, not because they were trying to prove anything, but because stopping would have meant acknowledging that something was off. It was easier, at least for a few more steps, to pretend the figure was just another walker who had chosen a strange place to stand. Then he was gone, not moving away, not stepping behind anything. Gone. Colin said he turned to Arthur then, expecting some kind of reaction. But Arthur had already slowed, his attention fixed on the place where the figure had been. There had been no sound, no movement to track, nothing that would explain how a man could simply stop being visible in open ground. They might have turned back then. Colin thought about it later and said that would have been the sensible thing to do, but something kept them moving forward. He never described it as a decision. It was more like the absence of one, the path ahead continuing because neither of them had given it a reason not to. They hadn't gone far when the figure appeared again. This time, he was higher on the ridge, closer to the standing stones, and the distance between where he had been and where he stood now made no sense. There was no cover between the two points, no way for someone to move that far without being seen, especially not in the time that had passed. That was when Colin understood what Arthur had seen before he said anything. The shape of the man was wrong, not distorted, not unclear, but out of place in a way that became more obvious the longer they looked. The outline suggested clothing that didn't belong to any time they recognized, something older, more rigid, with a weight to it that didn't shift properly with the wind. It was as if the figure had been placed into the landscape rather than standing within it. Neither of them called out. Colin admitted later that he had considered it, but the thought never fully formed into action. There was no sense that the figure expected to be spoken to, and no indication that it would respond if it had been. The man stood facing them for a long moment, then he vanished again. This time Colin saw it happen. There was no movement leading up to it, no sign of retreat. The figure was there, clear against the line of the ridge, and then it was not, leaving nothing behind but the same stretch of empty ground. That was when they stopped walking forward. They didn't say anything about turning back. Colin said it would have felt unnecessary to explain it, as though both of them had reached the same conclusion at the same moment. They changed direction without speaking and took a lower path away from the ridge, one that kept the stones out of sight as quickly as possible. On the way back, they talked, not about the figure. They talked about the weather, about a roof that needed repairing, about anything that belonged to the ordinary world. Colin said the conversation felt deliberate, not forced, but chosen, as if both men understood that speaking about what they had seen would give it more presence than either of them wanted to allow. Arthur never returned to that stretch of the moor. Colin didn't either. When he spoke about it later, he didn't try to explain what they had seen. He only said that it had been real in the same way everything else around them had been real, and that the only difference was that it did not behave the way a person should, and that was enough. For the family, the story settled into place beside the one from the war, not connected in any obvious way, but difficult to separate completely. Arthur never linked them, never suggested that the voice in the field and the figure on the moor had anything to do with each other. He simply carried both of them as facts. There were other moments, too, smaller ones that never became full stories, things mentioned in passing and left there. A place that felt wrong to walk through for no clear reason. A stretch of ground where the wires in his hands would cross without explanation. a feeling sometimes that he had stepped into a place where something else had already been moving before he arrived. He didn't dwell on those. He would mention them, then move on the same way he did with everything else. If someone asked him what he thought it meant, he would give the same answer he always did. It meant it had happened. Nothing more, nothing less. By the time the stories reached the rest of the family, Arthur was already gone. That changed the way people talked about them. When he had been alive, there had always been the option to ask him again, to press him for more detail or a clearer answer, even if he rarely gave one. After he was gone, the story settled into what people remembered, and what they remembered most clearly was not the detail, but the way he had told them, plainly, without emphasis, as if none of it required belief to be real. For a while, that was enough. The story from the war stayed as it was, repeated in the same shape each time, with no additions and no attempts to explain it beyond what he had already said. The story from the moor followed it, usually shorter, usually told with a slight hesitation, as if whoever was telling it felt the lack of explanation more than Arthur ever had. But it was the smaller moments that began to change over time. They hadn't seemed like much when Arthur mentioned them, a place that felt wrong to walk through, a stretch of ground where the wires in his hands would cross for no reason he could explain. A sense now and then that he had stepped into something already in motion. At the time, those things had passed without much attention. Later, they were harder to ignore. It was Arthur's daughter who first pointed it out, though not in a way that sounded like a discovery. She mentioned it during an ordinary conversation, the kind that wandered between memories without any clear direction. She said that her father had always known when to leave a place, even when nothing about it suggested he should. Not just during the war, not just on the moor, all through his life. She remembered him turning back from a path without explanation, choosing a different route without saying why, or standing still for a moment before continuing in a way that seemed deliberate, even when no one else could see a reason for it. At the time, it had seemed like instinct, something practical, something learned from experience, as now she wasn't so sure, others began to add to it. A neighbor recalled Arthur refusing to cross a field that everyone else used regularly, choosing instead to walk the long way around without complaint. A friend mentioned that Arthur had once stopped in the middle of a conversation, turning his head slightly as if listening to something no one else could hear, before excusing himself and stepping outside. None of these things had seemed important on their own. Together they formed something harder to dismiss. Arthur had never said that anything followed him. He had never suggested that the voice in the field or the figure on the moor had anything to do with those smaller moments. He had treated each one the same way, as something that had happened, nothing more. But the consistency of it remained. He had known when to move. He had known when to stop. He had known when to leave. The family never agreed on what that meant. Some preferred the simpler explanation. The idea that Arthur had been unusually perceptive, that he had developed a sense for places and situations that others missed. It was a comfortable way of understanding it, one that kept everything grounded in the world they already knew. Others were less certain. They pointed to the war story, to the voice that had spoken where no one had been, and to the figure on the moor that had appeared where no one could have stood. They didn't try to connect those moments directly, but they couldn't ignore the way they echoed through the rest of his life. Something had happened to him, or something had been there all along. No one could say which. What remained, more than anything else, was the way Arthur himself had treated it. He had never chased it, never tried to understand it beyond what was necessary to move through it. He hadn't searched for answers or attempted to prove anything to anyone else. He had simply adjusted when he needed to. And then he had gone on. That was the part that stayed with people, not the voice, not the figure, not even the smaller moments that had become more significant over time. It was the sense that whatever he had encountered, he had accepted it without question. Not because it made sense, but because it had been real to him in a way that didn't require explanation. Years later, the story still surfaced from time to time, usually in quiet conversations rather than large gatherings. They were told carefully, without embellishment, and always with the same underlying understanding that they were not meant to be resolved. They had already been lived. For some, that was enough, and for others, the lack of an answer became the story itself, the part that lingered long after the details had been repeated enough times to feel familiar. The idea that a man could move through a life that contained moments like that, accept them without explanation, and never look back to question them. It left something open, not a conclusion, but a space where one might have been. And in that space, the stories remained exactly as Arthur had left them, unchanged, unconnected, and quietly certain in a way that made them difficult to dismiss, even for those who wanted to. Because whatever had happened to him, whatever had spoken or appeared or simply been present at the edges of his life, it had never needed to explain itself. It had only needed to be there. And for Arthur, that had always been enough.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards. Free shipping with no minimum purchase. Triple points on 2 purchases and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards. Free shipping with no minimum purchase. Triple points on 2 purchases and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.